or in certain teachings such as Taoism. In fact, Tao means path. The Tao is the path. This is the path that is followed until one is free of the influence of yin and yang, or the positive and the negative. Through following the Tao, the path, one gets free of all dualism. So in other teachings as well, the path is central. So the word path has very special and important meaning. It's the path that leads beyond the power of all negative and positive. So it's a very special thing. If we look in Christianity, we also find the path. There are the words of Jesus Christ that I am the path, or I am the way. Christ has said that he is the way to God. And what this means is that within Christ, within the way of living and behaving of Christ, there are the characteristics of selflessness, of living without self, of living not for self, of being willing to do anything for the sake of being free of self. So in Christ's life, we can see the path as well, the path that leads to God, to that which is beyond positive and negative. So, and this in fact is the heart of Christianity, this removal of the self, removing of the I. This is the kind of understanding we'd like to make amongst the religions, that we can see that in each religion there is the path, and we don't need to argue about it. We all just follow the path in our own way in order to be beyond the self, beyond all positive and all negative. So we encourage all Christians to see the symbol of the cross in the following way. The cross is shaped like this. The upright is the self, the I, and then the cutting of the I, the cutting, the removal of the self. In the symbol of cross, there is this very clear reminder of the heart of all spiritual practice, this removal of the I. So cutting away the self, this is the stairway to the highest thing, to God. Or there's the first commandment of God, that the order of God that forbid Adam and Eve to eat the fruit that led to the discrimination of good and evil and the attachment to that good and evil. If one doesn't discriminate good and evil, if one doesn't regard things as good and evil, there's no attachment to good and evil, and then one is free. So even here is the same teaching as Buddhism. Is in fact, in God's first commandment, there is the heart of Buddhism. Allow us to take a little time to go off the subject for a minute. Across the highway, we're building an international Dhamma hermitage. And the purpose of this hermitage is in order to bring together representatives from all the religions, in order to develop a mutual understanding that all true religion, all of the true religions have at their heart the path, that there is the path in each of these religions. And we why bother arguing about which one is better or more attractive or more this or more that, but to understand and respect each other in terms of this path that exists in all religions, and then to help each other and support each other to follow this path. So we're trying to develop an international Dhamma hermitage for this purpose, so that all religions can be most successful in following the path, the one path that is at the heart of every religion, and to stop worrying about the secondary and superficial issues. So all religions teach the path. Buddhism, in Christianity, it's taught that Jesus Christ is the way, is the path. In Buddhism, the Dhamma is the path. In Taoism, the Tao, is the path. All religions have the path. Religions teach the path to the highest thing. All religions teach the path to the goal, which is beyond all suffering, to live without any dukkha, without any conflict and strife, to live in true peace, in perfect peace. This is the heart of every religion. And so it's possible that all the religions can get together and cooperate. It's utterly foolish to argue and compete. Instead, we should understand each other and see this path that is the center of all religion, and then cooperate. And so this is enough for an introduction about the path. And now we'll talk about the path directly. The path in Buddhism is called the Arya Atthangika Magga, which means the Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Path with eight components or eight factors. The details of the Noble Eightfold Path are not something that we have to talk about right here. There are plenty of books about Buddhism that adequately explain the various factors, the various components of the Noble Eightfold Path, so that we don't have to use time to talk about them. They're simply right view, right aspiration, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. As for the details of these eight various factors, one can find these in the many books that deal with the subject. There's not anything very tricky or complicated about these eight factors. But what we would like to give special attention to is the word right. All of these are right, right view, right aspiration, and so on. And it's very important that we understand correctly what right means. In Pali, the word Dhamma means right, or in Thai they use the word chob. And chob has a sense of being just, of being correct. So when we use the word right, this means most of all that it is correct. It's correct. If we use the word right, then it must have some reference. So right according to what? Right in terms of what? This is very important. What is the object? Or what is the reference of this rightness? In Buddhism, if it is right, it must be right in terms of Nibbana. The reference point of this correctness in Buddhism is Nibbana. It must lead right to Nibbana. In Christianity, it must be right towards God, the supreme thing. Or for us here, it's enough to say right regarding new life. Right, this is enough for us. Because we've already discussed that new life means life that is beyond positive and negative. So it's funny, it's enough just to have to be right to the new life. In the Pali, it is explained clearly that the meaning of sama is to be right in terms of its goal. It's right if it truly, successfully leads to the goal. So that means that right view is right if it's pointing to, leading to the goal of Nibbana, or whatever we'd like to call it. And then right aspiration, right aim, is right if it's truly pointing to, aiming at, leading to the goal. And this is for right speech, right action, right livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and right concentration. There are four words that explain sama, quite clearly. The meaning of these four words is very important. The first is viveka, or viveka. Viveka means to be supremely single, or supreme singularity, utmost singleness. Eka means one or single, and we means supreme or the highest or perfect. So this means to be perfectly independent. It's perfect freedom, to be completely one. To be completely one is the and so the path or sama is to depend on this viveka, to lead to this viveka. The second word is viraka, which means, and the path is leading to viraka, or fading away. If we use the word viraka in terms of physical things, it would be the stains, the dyes in a piece of cloth fading away, becoming fainter and fainter until completely gone. If we use it in terms of the mind, it means the fading away of attachment. As attachment dissolves, breaks up, and fades away, this is viraka, until the complete fading away of attachment. This is the second word used to describe the path. The third word is the word nirodha, which we talked quite a bit about yesterday. Nirodha is the path leads to the quenching down. The path is the quenching down of dukkha. And the fourth may sound be a little bit difficult to hear and understand, but is wosaka. Wosaka is the fourth of these words. Wosaka parinami means always inclining towards, always tending towards throwing away, always tending towards throwing away our burdens, The burdens, of course, are anything, are any attachment to any of the five khandhas. The attachments are the burdens. Wosaka is throwing away the burdens of attachment. And so, Wosaka Parinami is, the mind is always tending towards, inclining towards, the throwing away of attachment. For it to be the path, for something to truly be the path, there must be this constant throwing away. The mind is constantly inclining towards getting rid of attachments, relieving itself of the burden of attachment. Nowadays in this world, our tendency isn't to throw away, to get rid of. Our tendency is always to accumulate, to get more. And so it's not Wosaka Parinami. It's the opposite of that. And so nowadays the world is cluttered. It's full of all kinds of junk that we don't even need. And so there's not a whole lot of Wosaka Parinami. And so there are these four words to explain what we mean by right. We wake up, this perfect singleness, which means true spiritual independence, perfect freedom. Then viraka, that fading away, meaning that the mind is not making more attachment and more dukkha. It's going towards the fading away of dukkha. And then nirodha, the quenching and the coolness. And then wosaka, always tending towards throwing away, getting rid of all those burdens, lightening the load. These four then are the basic principles of rightness, of correctness. But nowadays in the world, nobody's really interested in this. And so all the things we do are going in the opposite direction. Take giving charity, giving dana, giving charity. It's usually done not for giving up, not for throwing away, but to receive certain benefits. People give charity in order to be reborn in heaven, or now big companies give charity as a way of getting advertisement or to enhance their image. Or then keeping morality, behaving decently and peacefully. This isn't done for viraka, viveka. It's done to build up one's pride, to build up one's reputation, and politicians often cultivate this image for various worldly benefits. This isn't really right, at least in spiritual terms. On the worldly level, it may be right. That may be correct for the way things work in the world. But in terms of ending dukkha, it's not correct. For even developing the mind, practicing samadhi, meditation, is very often not for viveka, viraka, nirodha, or wosaka parinami. Meditation is often done with all kinds of trying to get magic powers or being able to read people's minds or to become famous or to go back to the West and be a meditation teacher, and all kinds of things are taken as the goal of meditation. And so if we don't have these qualities, these four qualities, then even what superficially may seem to be a spiritual practice is no longer spiritual. it's dragged, it's just turned into another worldly activity. Some people do vipassana to see all kinds of things. Vipassana means to see clearly. And some people do vipassana in order to clearly see where dead people have gone and been reborn, or to see what heaven looks like, or see what hell looks like, or even to see what the next winning lottery number will be. These, of course, none of these have anything to do with viveka, viraka, nirota, and wosaka parinami. So when we for real vipassana must have these four qualities. If it's lacking these qualities, it's just some fake, play, superficial, worldly show of vipassana. So we must be very careful that everything we do, all our spiritual work, has these four qualities. And so giving away charity, helping the poor, and doing good deeds, these are generally done for benefits in this world, or worldly benefits such as a good reputation, a happy mind, for to feel good about oneself or to respect oneself, and things like this. Or sometimes to impress other people, or to, who knows what, to become famous. This is correct in worldly terms. As far as way things work in this world, that's correct. But it's not correct in terms of being above the world. That kind of attitude and understanding doesn't lead beyond the world. It doesn't free us from worldly conditions. For it to be correct in terms of transcending the world, being above and free of the world, these four qualities are necessary. This means that it must be correct in terms of Nibbana. So sama, rightness, correctness, has this, must be correct in terms of Nibbana. And if so, it has these four characteristics. Look carefully and you'll see that worldly correctness, what is right according to the world, always leads to being stuck in the world. Worldly ideas about what is correct and right always leads to getting stuck and trapped within worldly conditions. But right, in terms of being beyond the world's court, in terms of Nibbana, in terms of true freedom and peace, has these four qualities of perfect singleness, fading away, quenching, and always inclining towards the throwing away of burdens. Now we come to the word atankika. Atankika, ata means eight, ika means factor, component, part, or ingredient. It's usually translated the eightfold. We don't really know what this word fold means, but maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. But the meaning of the Pali is eight factors, eight components, or eight ingredients, which come together to form one unity. It's not eight separate paths or eight parallel paths. It's eight ingredients that come together to form one unity. We can compare it to a rope with eight strands, or an eight-ply rope, where there are three little strings woven together to form one strong rope. Any of the little strings by themselves couldn't do very much, but tie them, weave them together, and we've got one strong rope that's sufficient to do the job. Now, although it's one, the eight factors must fit together in a unified whole, there is one factor which is the leader, which is like the main ingredient. It's like in a medicine, especially in herbal medicine, where you mix various things together. There will be one that is the primary ingredient. So in the Noble Eightfold Path, there is one factor which is like this. And this factor is samadhi, or right concentration. Now this may sound a little bit strange to some of you. Many people would think that it's right understanding, right view, samadhi, the first factor, which is most important, which must be the leader. But the way it really works is that in the path, it's samadhi that is the leader, the main factor in doing the work. But what's important here is that it's samadhi. It's not just concentration, but it's got to be right concentration. And it's right concentration if that right in concentration includes right view. If there's no right view, the concentration can never be right. So for the concentration to be right, it's being backed up by right understanding. And so the way it works is that, or we've got then a special word or a new word to describe this. Some places the Buddha called it Arya Sama Samadhi. Noble right concentration, or enemyless right concentration. And this noble right concentration has seven supporters. The noble right concentration is doing the work, but it's backed up by the other seven factors. Concentration by itself couldn't really do much. It couldn't solve any problems. But if right concentration is backed up by the other seven factors, then it is capable of cutting through all our problems and solving the dilemma of dukkha. So it's this noble right concentration which is the leader of the path, but it's still backed up, supported by the other seven. At first it seems strange that wisdom, right understanding and right aspiration aren't leading the way, that they've become helpers and supporters of this noble right concentration. We talk so much about wisdom that it sounds a little funny that they're in a support role here. But without that, the real power and the real strength of the path is with that right concentration, and the other things support it. If we were to talk about wisdom, cutting through the defilements, wisdom penetrating to truth, it's only the wisdom that has this noble right concentration. Without that right samadhi, wisdom can't really function. So at first when we found this in the Pali, we didn't believe it. It didn't make sense to us. How could concentration be the leader with right understanding and right aspiration as backups or supports? It didn't make much sense to us, but it's written there in the scriptures, and so we studied it and tried to check out whether it was true or not. And so there's noble, right concentration. Not just right concentration, but noble. The right concentration that gets free of all enemies. And this is supported by wisdom, right time, right understanding, and right aspiration, as well as all the other rightnesses of the path. It would be like having something very sharp that had no weight. It couldn't cut. It couldn't cut through anything. Take a razor blade, which is very sharp, but it doesn't have the weight to cut through anything thick like a tree. And unfortunately, our defilements are rather thick. So just having the sharpness, the wisdom, the understanding isn't enough. There's got to be the weight of samadhi with it. And so to do the work of removing the attachments, it takes right view, it takes right aspiration, it takes right morality, it takes enough right energy, enough mindfulness. But there's got to be that strength, that focus, that samadhi of the mind to actually do it. So right samadhi must be accompanied by all the other factors in order to cut through attachment, to remove attachment. We tend to have a lot more interest in sharpness than in weight. We respect and honor sharpness more than weight. Meaning we in society, for example, the ones that are given the higher status are the intellectuals, much more than the workers. But in cutting through in the Pali, when it comes to really doing the work, the one that's given the emphasis, giving the number one place, is right samadhi. Because in cutting through attachment, it's samadhi that does the work. Wisdom may guide things, and the wisdom has to be there. But what actually does the work is the factor of right concentration. There's another name for this kind of concentration. It's called anantariya samadhi. Anantariya means to be, it means immediate, in the sense that wisdom is right there with the samadhi. It's samadhi that is stuck together, which is fused. It's samadhi that is fused together with wisdom. And when that wisdom is right there with that samadhi, then it can do the work of cutting through the defilements. Literally, anantariya means without gap. There's no space. There's not the least bit of space between wisdom and samadhi. And so, sharpness and weight cannot be separated. If you take them, these two qualities apart, you don't get any work done. So we must combine the sharpness and the weight in order to cut through the attachments, to chop through the defilements. And it's also necessary for there to be sila. Sila is living life in a good, proper way, a peaceful way of life, or a normal way of life. Sila means normal. It's often translated ethics. So having an ethical, decent, good life is like a foundation. To do the cutting, to use the sharpness in the weight, to cut through the defilements, we need something to stand on. And that firm foundation we stand on is sila. For it to be the Noble Eightfold Path, for it to truly be the path, there must be the weight and the sharpness working intimately together with no separation. And then the foundation of sila must be there as well. We can't just get by with wisdom, with intelligence. There must be the ethical life and the weight of samadhi. Or we can't get by on just one of these. We must have all three of these key ingredients working together. And so, within the Eightfold Path, there is the correctness or even the perfection of ethical living. There is the perfection of mental strength and skill, of samadhi, and there is the perfection of wisdom. These three correctnesses are functioning together in an inseparable way in the Noble Eightfold Path. As for the details of each of these eight factors, it's not difficult to find information on them in many of the books that have been published, even the ones that have been written by Western scholars. You can get sufficient information on these. But the key ingredient, what's really important, is to understand how these work together. These factors are often considered separately, and nobody bothers to put them together. So the question is, how do they work together? How do they come together into one path? And then what is the way? How does that path cut through attachment? How does that path remove the attachment? This is what must be understood. And so it is that the Fourth Noble Truth answers the question, by what method? This Fourth Noble Truth explains the method. And within this Fourth Noble Truth, we have the summary or the completion and integration of all the other Noble Truths. The Fourth Noble Truth is the path that leads to the quenching of dukkha. So the result of this path, the fruits of the path, are the Third Noble Truth, the quenching of all dukkha. And the way that this is done is by removing the cause of dukkha, removing the source of dukkha, removing, which is the Second Noble Truth. And then the problem we started with in the beginning, the problem of dukkha, is gone. And so in the Fourth Noble Truth, all the Noble Truths are completed. So in summary, the Noble Eightfold Path is the path of life, but it must be a path of new life, the path of new life that is completely beyond all problems. This is what the Eightfold Path is about. And so we finish today's discussion, and our meeting today is complete.